Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. I think this is podcast episode 8. And today we're going to be talking about pricing your work and actually setting up the production for your work, talking about things like storyboards, working with others, how to, specifically with animation, how to make sure that 10 people can do their work and then it all kind of ends up as one piece in the end, things like that. Anyway, let's get started by talking about some pricing. And I always ask some questions right before the show on Facebook, you know, to try to get an idea of what people want to talk about, what people want to hear about, and the questions people need answered in their kind of creative quest, let's call it. And I can't believe I just said that. And I got a couple from one from Ian and one from Kevin, and they were both about pricing the job correctly. How do you price your work correctly for the market? And a lot of beginners really run into this because they've never, there's two things going on. They've never charged for their work. And the second thing is a lot of times they're happy just to be able to get the work, and they tend to undercharge for that reason. So there's a lot of things going on, including a lot of production houses and people looking for freelance workers that know that beginners don't know how to charge for their work. And sometimes they're taken advantage of, especially if they're really good. So let's start off with the first thing that allows you that you need to think about when you charge for your work. The number one thing you need to think about is how good you are. How good are you at the job, and can they hire somebody else for this price that would do a better job in a faster amount of time? So you really have to be self-aware about what your level is as far as your talent level and how quickly you get a job done and how well you get a job done. It's not always tied to how long you've been in the industry, but that's a pretty good guess, a pretty good metric of how good and how valuable you are as somebody that's doing work for money, right? The second thing you have to think about is your location in the world. Different places give different rates. Different places give different salary. So this works with salary too. You have to really think about the cost of living. If you're in New York or LA or Chicago, it's going to be higher than if you're doing work in other places. And this goes for big cities like London, and you can, you know what I'm talking about. But you need to really think about your location. So if you want to compete, you have to really think about location. And I would say that after that, you need to think about the project. Now, how long the project will take, how long it will take you to do the project, how much your time is worth, how long it would take you, how long it would take a team to do. So you could see that before we even start thinking about what your price is, we have a lot of things that are going into consideration. And this is why this question is so hard to answer, because the real answer to this question is it depends. And how I would go about pricing and thinking about pricing is to talk to people that are on your level. Talk to, if you're a freelancer, talk to other people that are in your general skill level that are doing the type of work that you do. And really, you know, go buy them a drink and ask them if they can give you an idea what they charge, what's their hourly rate, what's their salary like, and ask them what you think they think you should get paid. If they know your work and they know your talent level, try to get an honest answer that says, hey, you know, you're pretty good, but you don't know this or this, or you don't have the client relationship skills that you need to be able to do this job. So you may start off with a little bit less or whatever. You need to get a really solid idea. And already in the chat room, people are like, just give a price already, right? So and the problem is you can't do that, because if I say your hour is worth $50, and then that doesn't work for somebody whose hour is worth $300, and that doesn't work for somebody whose hour is worth $1,000, or a team whose hour is worth $500, right? So you have to understand that the reason that there's no right answer to how much should you charge is because you're selling something that doesn't have a price, really. You're not selling, you know, you can't look across the street and see how much gas is priced across the street and have a war about it. You need to know what you're good at doing. You need to know that you're in doing work for other people. You need to know, you have to be good at client relationships. You have to answer phones. You have to get back to emails. Like, all these things change how much you can charge for your service. And it's very, very, very difficult to put a number on that. So, things you could do. You can ask your friends. You could get a range of how much your friends are charging and then start to charge that much. If you're charging at a certain price and you're getting a pretty much enough work, or in another way to say it, if you're getting too much work, if you're turning work down, that may be a good idea to start raising your price. If you've been charging, you know, $200-$300 for the day and you're booked all the time, it may be a good time to say, hey, everybody, my rate is now $350 or $400 or whatever it is, and see what happens. And, you know, my buddy Colin, who is a producer at Digital Kitchen where I worked, he when I left and when I started asking Colin about how to deal with cost and how to have that conversation with your clients about what things cost and how much we're charging and stuff like that, he gave me this list, three things that you should do when you're sitting in the room with your client when you're talking about how much this costs. So let's say that you're doing a project and it's a week-long project and you decide that for this week it's going to cost you and your team or whatever, your studio or your freelance rate or whatever it is. Let's say it's $5,000 or $10,000 or something like that. I don't know. But let's say it's $5,000, right? So what Colin says is the first thing you do is you open up the book and you say, this is the math on why I'm charging you this much. We're going to have three people over the course of 7 days or 5 days working for X amount of hours, and we charge this much per hour per person, and we think that it's going to take about a week, and therefore this times this is going to equal 5,000, whatever, or it equals 6,000, and we're going to give it to you for 1,000, whatever the numbers are. Just show them that this is real work being done by real people, and this is our price. So the next thing to do is explain the difference between the main effort of the work and then the revisions that the client gets to do. So, and this helps really, 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 this helps a lot when it comes to dealing with clients and revisions, because sometimes you get caught in a pit of, let's change this, and you thought it would take a week, but because the client keeps making changes, it's going to take, you know, 2-3 weeks. So he says really early on when you're talking about price, let them know how much they're paying for the actual work to do what we said we were going to do, and then allow them to make revisions, allow them to make changes, but make it very clear that you're not going to just keep making changes until they say it's okay. Because that's not what they're paying for, right? So just say, you know, we're going to work a week. On Wednesday, we're going to have a midpoint where we're all going to meet in a room, and then we're all going to discuss the work and look at it. And then if you want to make changes, of course, we're going to go make any changes you want on Wednesday. And then we're going to work Thursday, and then Thursday night, you're going to come in and you're going to look at it and make more changes. And then we're going to work based on those two midpoints all day Friday and deliver exactly what you wanted on Friday night. And then let them know, thirdly, the third thing is that overages on the project can occur if there are more revisions after Friday. If after Friday, after Thursday night, in other words, they want more changes, then they need to pay more. Now, and Colin makes a point to say, not only that, but you want to make sure to let them know that you want to make sure to let them know that if you go over, if you need an extra day, if something happens on your end, that you're not going to be charged, that they're not going to be charged, that it's our fault, and then if something happens, we're going to eat those costs going into Monday, right? So those three things, he says, when talking about pricing, remove pricing from being this number that you just want to charge as much as you want, and they want to charge, they want to pay the least amount that they want. When you describe these situations as, this is a week of our time, this is how much a week of our time costs, this is what we're going to do for you for this, and this is why at the end of this week we're done working for you. And if we do more work at the end of this week, then we're going to charge you if it's your fault, and we're not going to charge you if it's our fault. And I think that's a really, really sensible way to approach getting paid without getting emotional about it. Because I think that the reason artists and especially, you know, good designers and artists don't get paid enough is because they are so emotionally attached to their work and not hurting anyone's feelings, and they want to be the good guy. I don't think artists and most creative people got into this business with an idea that they have to sit and discuss prices all day. People got into this business because they like doing what they do. So let's hurry up and get this money crap figured out. If you want to pay half, that's fine. Let me just start working because that's what I know how to do. And figuring this whole pricing thing out is really important because it allows you to get paid what you're worth. It allows the work to be better. It allows the clients to be more educated. It helps everything out. But you have to get over the idea that you're going to work at any cost at any price. Because clients will take advantage of you, and not always maliciously, but because you let them. Because if you let them keep making changes, they will. And I've been on the other side of this, where I've hired people to help me out, and I'm the one that continuously makes changes until the deadline's up. And I know how easy it is to fall into that on both sides, and it's frustrating on both sides. So you just really need to set up lines in the sand and remove your emotions away from it and say, I worked for a day, therefore I get paid a day. Or I got work for an hour, I get paid for the hour. Right. I feel like I've talked about price for this long and I still haven't even said a number. So let me talk about, again, a couple ways you can figure out what your price is. And, like I said, talk to the buddy, talk to somebody in your field. There are reviews. What do they call those things? Like surveys? That's the word. There are surveys. There's one that Motionographer did specifically for motion designers. You could go check that one out. There are ones from probably AIGA, probably has a few from more print designers or still designers, or I should say traditional designers, I guess. What's the word for that? You can check those out. So check out those documents, and they might let you know what everyone else is charging. Why not go talk to an owner of a company that you might know and ask them how much they're charging for, how much they're paying freelancers for work that you want to do, that you think you're capable of doing? Go into the local, go into your local production house that maybe you want to work for, or you may have a connection to, and try to get in through that way. If you have a buddy that works there, see if he can find out how much people are charging, and you want to be in your market. And the problem to tell anybody a price, especially over the internet, doesn't work, is because in different parts of the country, different parts of the world, in different parts of the city, the prices can vary so much. And again, it all depends on how good you are, how many people you know, and how long you've been doing it, and you know where you're located. So. How can I end this big thing about pricing with a solid answer? I guess it's a big depends, and I would say that you could probably get more than what you're charging right now, especially if you're good. So really consider how good you are at what you do, and look around and be very clear on your talent level. But when you look around and you say, I can do this, and you see other people making a living from this, you have to really, really step back and set your prices. Do some research and then move forward into it. I'll say one last thing about pricing, and that is not everyone is prepared for this. And not everyone got in, like I said earlier, not everyone got into this industry because they like talking about pricing in the middle of a meeting. Most people got into this because they just like what they do. They like pushing the buttons. They like making stuff move. They like making beautiful work. They like making artwork. They like designing. And all of this business stuff is secondary. Now, there's two things you could do. You could either step up and learn this stuff, this business stuff, which is difficult, but worth it. Or you can just go get a job somewhere and then not worry about it. And basically let other people worry about how much all the pricing is. And then you just have to worry about your salary, which is another difficult thing to do, but it's not a daily difficult thing to do. I would say that overall, the best bet you can make on yourself is to learn some of these techniques and business things and learn what you're worth. But if you really just want to sit there and push the buttons and make stuff, maybe a full-time job, at least for now, might be a good place for you, especially if you're a beginner, especially early on when you're not sure of your talent, especially if you don't know where you sit in the marketplace, if you don't know how talented you are compared to other people. Getting a kind of a normal job and not freelancing and not worrying about this stuff may be the best thing you could do, because then your mind is open and clear to concentrate on becoming better, so that when you do work for yourself or you do freelance or you do more better work down the road, you're going to have that knowledge and then get what you're worth, I guess. So that's a little bit on pricing. Now, Bella Peppa asked a question from the chat room here, and he said, should we charge per hour or should we charge for the full job? And I would say that they inform each other. I would use your per hour price. So figure out what your per hour price is. I would use your per hour price to set a job price. And then I would just charge for the job. Again, if we go back to those three things from Colin, if we go back to those things, just be very clear about this is the project price. But if we go over the project with time, or if you make changes at the end, then there needs to be more money to do more work. So I think you could be very clear about it. I think either way, realizing that work equals money and just setting that language up with a client is fine. So if you want to do per hour and say, hey, I work with a web developer that charges per hour, and I know him and trust him that he's going to mark his hours down and then bill me per hour. And in that situation, it makes more sense to just do it per hour, because I don't know how long these projects take. He might not even know how long these projects take. So we decided on a per hour system. But with a set idea, especially if the idea is solid going in and you just need to execute it, a lot of times charging for the full job is just easier to keep track of. You don't have to sit and track hours. You have a good idea of how much work you're going to put into it. You do the work and then you bill them. And I forgot one more thing about pricing, and then we'll get into the production and storyboard stuff after this. One more thing about pricing is a lot of people in the chat room were asking about if how much you should get paid up front versus how much you should get paid after the job. And traditionally, I haven't done a ton of freelance, but traditionally, and from what my friends have said and what I've read about and learned about, the way to do this is to get half up front and then half on completion. And that's written into your contract. Make sure you have a contract for every job you do. Write it out in the contract. This is how much work I'm doing. This is how much I'm getting paid to start, which is half of the project cost. And then this is on delivery. And make sure you write this in on delivery. When I give you the final piece, you pay me the rest of it. And like I said, there's a great talk. I said this right before the show in the chat room. I said there's a great talk called F.U. Pay Me that I posted on the blog not too long ago. If you do a search for F.U. Pay Me, and not just F, but you know the whole word, you can find this presentation done in San Francisco, I think it was. And he talks a lot about contracts, about lawyers, about making sure that you get paid and how you set up these things to make sure that you do the work and you get paid. So for really, really hardcore stuff, check that out. It's a great presentation. But overall, I would say that writing into your contract that you get half up front and half on completion would be pretty standard. So thanks for the questions, guys. Those were good about pricing. Some people in the chat room are mentioning there's 40-60 and things like that, where you get 40 up front and 60 later. If that makes sense for you and that's okay with your clients, I don't see it a problem with that. And somebody else is mentioning capital. Capital's asking about 30-day payment time. I think they call that net 30 or something like that, where they have 30 days to pay you at the end. You know, and like I said, I think you should check the talk out. I think he talks, the FU Pay Me talk, talks a little bit about that. So I would check that out and see kind of what he says about it. But really, if you do the work, I think you should, you know, checks in the mail, as they say, but actually in the mail. So that is pricing. There's always a lot to say about pricing. I have quite a few blog posts on it. If you go search for pricing or cost or, you know, work full price or work for free, never for cheap. You could check that post out and send me any questions, especially in the chat room, Twitter, if you guys have anything else. So let's move into production. There were a lot of questions in the Facebook page about what you do all day, kind of, you know, what is the day-to-day on a job where you have a team working. And from front to back, from concept to hitting render and giving it to the client, you know, what is that process like for a lot of jobs? And what I wanted to do is run down kind of our process. And when I say our process, I'm saying that when I worked at Digital Kitchen, they had a really specific process. And I by talking with other studios and working with a couple other studios, I've seen that some of it is pretty similar. And it changes depending on what where you're working, and you know, again, a lot of things change. But I want to give you a general idea of what a project looks like from start to finish. And usually starts with the idea. Now, the idea can either come from the client, or the idea can come from us, and that depended on where the client was in production. So an idea that is already kind of ready to go, usually the client or the agency or whoever we're working for comes in with a set storyboard or maybe a treatment. So there's a couple different ways that could happen. The most finished idea is in a storyboard form already, which means they're in kind of Photoshop boards, printed out in like a little book or in a PDF that we could all look at online. And it says, you know, first, and it's basically the story of the commercial. First, the logo pops open, and then all these things come flying out, and then all these things form a logo, and then they all turn into a diamond, and then they all rush back into our logo, and the lid closes, and then we put the tagline on, right? And it's all spelled out. It's ready to go. And they even had a designer put some effort into designing it. You know, it's blue with sparkles, and it's kind of dark, like dark midnight blue, really elegant with kind of shiny glass and silver, real elegant looking storyboards. And basically they're coming to us to say, we want this, but moving, and we want you to make it, and we want to know how much it costs, and we want to know how long it takes. So that's one start of a project, is the full board pretty much ready to go. We have maybe a little input on it, like, oh, what if, you know, what if the sparkles actually did this cool little move before they went into the logo? And maybe they're open to that, maybe they're not, but we have a discussion. And then we do the job, or we bid on it, or we give them a quote, and if everyone's happy, we do the work. The second level down, or the second least finished type of client, comes in with an idea. Maybe they come in with just a treatment. Maybe they just come in with a paragraph or an idea that says, we want this thing that's where this boy wakes up and then he walks across the room and he, you know, opens up his sock drawer, and then all these cartoons come flying out of it, and they all drag him down the hallway and make him turn on the TV, and they all sit and watch Nickelodeon together, this boy and all these cartoon ghosts that are flying out of his sock drawer. And we go, that's cool. And they go, can you guys make a storyboard for this? And maybe put some effort into designing this and fleshing this out so we know how it looks. Because in their head, everyone's got an idea of how this project is going to look, but they're maybe coming to us to say, can you do storyboard work? And luckily at Digital Kitchen, we had some really good storyboard artists. And we would say, yeah, do the storyboard. Sometimes for money, sometimes just to try to get the job. And it would be handed to our very talented designers to make storyboards. And we would, mock up, maybe do a photo shoot, maybe have a kid, you know, in a bedroom photo shoot, and then have, some 3D artist make some cartoon characters, and then comp it all together into this storyboard that looked like that looks like a finished project product, but is just still frames instead of animation. And that is a whole art unto itself. I never became great at storyboarding. I've boarded on dozens and dozens and dozens of pitches, and I've never been picked but once. The only board that got picked of mine was the Conan O'Brien title sequence for his Tonight Show. And that was actually right at the end of my career at DK, but... you could see, like, out of all of those things, that was the only one that got picked up. And that's because I wasn't that great at it. And it's also because, like I said, it's a skill onto its own that you really have to study. And it's really fun when you get better at it. But again, we were blessed with some really good storyboard artists at Digital Kitchen. So they take it. They take the concept and they make it their own. And they make it come alive on paper with usually using Photoshop, some 3D stuff, and whatever they want. Make it look as good as they can, and then they show the client, and the client says, yes, we're going to do it, or no, we're not going to do it. That's based on the storyboard. So that I would consider the second level down as far as idea completion is. We have the idea, but we need you to make it look good before we can make a final decision on whether or not we're going to actually produce this commercial. I'd say the next level down from that is a client, and these are some of the best clients, by the way. They come in and they say, we have this product coming out. We have no clue how to market it. What would you guys do? And then we sit and we have a discussion about, you know, what's the product all about? Or what are you selling? Are you saying it's a candy bar? You know, how did you used to sell this candy bar? What is your core message? Do you have a mascot? Do you have colors? Do you have a logo? Do we have to use your catchphrase? Do we have to put the message together that yum, yum, your candy bar is good? Or can we do something crazy like, you know, a Twix commercial or something? Bad example. Those are awful. But, you know, do something crazy and then just slap your candy bar at the end and then and do that. Like, how crazy can we make this? Or how specific or whatever? You have a little conversation about it. And then all those smart people with storyboard skills sit in a room and talk about what this could be. And some people, some non-storyboarders, you know, just smart people that have ideas and want to make a piece happen. And then you basically, at least at DK, we sat around in a circle and talked about what this could be. How can we tell the story of this product or service or TV show and let them and make them really want us to make it, and also something that we want to make, you know, something really fun that we would have fun making, that people would like watching, that the client would like paying for, that that would sell more candy bars, like all these things come into play, right? So we all sit in a circle and we all toss out ideas, and I had a lot of fun doing this at work. It was a good reason to get away from the computer and kind of stretch your brain out a little bit and think about things. I really had a lot of fun in this process. And luckily we got to do that on jobs like, if you check out my portfolio, on Screen Vision, Key Bank was another good one. where we came up with the animation of KeyBank, and they just came to us with the concept, which is we're going to interview people and we want you to animate it. So those projects were really, really fun. Things like the Webby Awards, I'm trying to think of other ones, and or even the Conan stuff. You know, the Conan O'Brien one, that whole process was basically them saying what they wanted and us talking about how we can make what they wanted and make a really kick-ass show opener. And that was really fun. So anyway, those are the three things, I think the three main levels of jobs that would come into the house. And then if we won them or not or whatever, that's like the beginning stage, which is the kind of pre-production, not even pre-production. That's like the pre-pre-production stage where we're deciding if we're even going to do the job. They're deciding if it's even a good idea. And finally, we walk in with boards. And if everything goes right, everyone looks at the storyboards and of course, the price and says, yes, let's go do this. Let's make this. It's gonna be a month. And we're going to have five people working on it. We have the people to work on it. All these things have to come into play. But as soon as everyone gives a thumbs up, a double thumbs up, then it goes into pre-production. And again, there's different ways of doing this, but this is how I'm making it in my head anyway. In pre-production, you get all the pieces together that you need to do the job. So if you're doing a shoot, if you're doing a photo shoot, if you're shooting video, if you're shooting, if you're doing 3D work, maybe it's hiring the people you need to hire. Maybe it's renting out the space to shoot the actors. Maybe it's getting catering. Maybe it's getting costumes, colors, paints, props, green screens, lights, cameras, renting lenses, renting cameras, getting a DP, getting a person that spins tennis shoes around for a living, finding that guy and getting him to work on this day, finding the perfect liquid simulation 3D artist to come in and start working. So all these things are pre-production that kind of get ready, that get those things ready for doing the actual work. So from there, you do your work. So for me, primarily, it was either going and shooting photos or shooting video. I was in pre-production and early on when there wasn't anything to composite, when there wasn't anything to animate, and everyone was waiting on stuff to do because we needed to shoot it all first. I was I was able to go to the shoots and take photos. And this is mainly because I shot a lot of photos and I had those skills, but they would get me out shooting photos, textures, green screen stuff. I would shoot video, you know, basic video of elements we needed for the shoot. And that would be my job for kind of the pre-production and then early production stage, is talking about what cameras we needed, what lenses we needed, how we're going to shoot this, the logistics of actually shooting it. Can we do this with one camera? Can we do it with two cameras? How many lights do we need to rent? And I was luckily in some of those talks because I had some background in photography and stuff like that. So that would be the pre kind of, and then starting in production, if there's no video to shoot, if there's no elements, we just need to start going. Then the pre-production and early production stages turn into cutting stuff out of photos or rotoing out footage or designing a logo or designing the typeface or getting a language put together for the workers. Because one thing you have to do, the other part of pre-production, especially with a large team, one of the main things pre-production does and early production is get the whole team talking in the same language and getting the whole team to know what their job is and getting the whole team to know what, when they finish, when they hit render, when they save their file, what it should look like and also what it should look like compared to everyone else's work. And this is a big deal if you're doing animation because you don't, you're getting 5-10 different artists working on their little 3 or 4 second section in the commercial. And when the editor gets all these clips, they all have to look like they go together. They all look like they have to come from the same artist and the same person that made it. You don't want 10 different styles cut together that are supposed to be the same thing. So a lot of the pre-production is all about What's the idea? What's the timing? What's the mood of the piece? What's the music going to be? Is it going to be real fast? Is it going to be real slow? Is it going to be big and powerful? Is it going to be more small and cartoony? Is it going to be fast? Is it going to be red? Is it going to be blue? Where's the storyboard? Let's all look at the storyboard and understand what's going on. There's a lot of hand waving, you know, people moving logos in and out with their hands, you know, and saying like in, out, you know, and then fast and then red and blue. And you know what I'm saying? It's getting everyone in the same mindset to go back to their computer and start working and know that when they finish, that everything's going to gel together, because that's what you want to do as a team, is get everyone started on the right foot so that things don't get out of place too early. So you're all working on your own separate section, and you're all doing your thing. Maybe one person's doing the end tag with the logo flipping around. Maybe one person is working on the very beginning. One person's working on all the particles flying out of the box, and one person is working on the actual main central logo part in the middle where it spells out beautiful or whatever it is. And then a whole different artist that's working on compositing all these things. So maybe there's a team. Maybe there's a 3D person that's working on the 3D type. And then there's a compositor that's taking those 3D renders and making those even better. And compositing the color correction, the dust, the atmosphere, the lens flares, the depth of field, the motion blur, the tone of the spot, making sure the colors are just right. So you could see with this big team, you really need to make sure up front that everyone knows what they're supposed to be doing and that everyone knows what it's supposed to look like at the end. So from there, everybody does their stuff, composites it together. Maybe the 3D is still working on their stuff, so they spit out like just a gray render, untextured version of this character wobbling around. And it all goes into the edit room, and the editor takes the music and the edit and maybe the voiceover and maybe the logo that isn't finished yet and just a still and puts together this commercial or title sequence or whatever it is as close as he can to the final. He wants to make it look as close as he can to what the client wants, mainly so that we can see it and see how much work we need to do now. And we could see and say, this is looking really good. This isn't even finished. How is everything standing? And all the artists get up and they go into a room and they all talk about it. And specifically, the creative director will get in there and say, how's this coming? I see that everything's gray. How's everything else going? Do you need more help, or is everything going to be fine? And then they look at my piece and they say, hey, that looks okay. The animation's good, but your colors are off, Nick. Why not? You need to add like a little bit more green to this to make it fit with everything else. And by the way, why not try adding a little bit more atmosphere or something to the shot? And then they go to the next artist, and the creative director would put all these things together. Bella Peppa is saying, I do keep saying he, and it is a very male-dominated job and career, but I'll try to say she sometimes. So we're all in the room and we're talking with the editor, we're talking with the creative director, and we're all saying, what can we do? We have another 4 or 5 days to work on this. What's the most important thing? And then maybe if my piece is finished or if somebody's piece is finished, they can jump onto this next piece or help out with somebody else, right? So that's the process. We may do that a couple times. We may end up in the edit bay with as much as we can get done in the next 3 days, slammed together into an edit that is edited together, blended together. Maybe there's a shot that still is green screen, that nothing is composited yet. But we're trying to get an idea of how close we are. We're looking at the deadline. We're looking at how far we are. We're looking at how many people we have on the job. And we're trying to make it as good as we can, because we know that, first of all, the client's going to be here in a day to look at it. And now we have to explain to him that, okay, this won't be green screen in the end. We promise. This is just a stand-in until we get to it. Or I understand that the 3D is all gray right now, but eventually it will be textured and all that stuff. But we're making sure the animation's ready before we texture it, blah, blah, blah. You want to get as much of that done as you can, because you're going to have a client in there, and he's going to be asking questions, and he wants to make changes, right? And he needs to see as far, as much as he can to make informed changes. So everyone's working. You have the midpoints, and the midpoints are all these things. In the room, maybe a quick little meeting about, do we need to hire an extra person? Somebody's not quite getting this particle thing figured out. Maybe we have to look into hiring a particle guy, or maybe there's a better way to do this. You know, maybe we should use particular instead of trying to figure this out in this crazy 3D program particle system. Or maybe we don't need real flow. You know, maybe we could just take that clip of water that splashes around that we have in the library and use that. Why not give that a shot before we spend another 4 days working on a real flow solution? So all those things happen, and it gets and gets and goes and goes and goes. And you know, after the last midpoint, it's usually pretty close. You have a few more tweaks, and usually the animation's pretty locked in, the voiceover's locked in, the music's getting close, maybe somebody else is working on the final music and doing some sound effects. And as it gets close, then you're getting this really exciting thing where it's good, the client likes it. What can we do to really make this doubly good? How can we blend these clips together? How can we make the edit less noticeable? You know, maybe the colors are slightly off still, and you make it better and better. Because like any creative project, it's never done. You just run out of time. And in those last few days, you're like, what can we do right now to make this really, really, really better and better and better? And that's what you do. You spend your time putting those hours in, looking at each other's work, critiquing it, being clear about what you like and what you don't like. The creative director's talking to everybody. The producer's talking to everybody. How's it going? Do you need something? Do you need lunch? Do you need to, a high five? You need a hug? And then it's all finished. You hit render. And the editor puts it together, and hopefully the client goes, this is really great, guys. And then you all go drink beer. And then you wake up the next day and you do it all over again. And that is the kind of quick run through of what a production schedule looks like. And in between, all the stuff I didn't talk about was you sitting there with headphones on doing your job, right? Which is the obvious part, right? In between all those meetings and the final piece is you working and working and working your ass off and reworking your 3 to 10 seconds that is your responsibility and making it as good as you can. So, that says it as far as my notes are concerned. I'm going to hop in here to the chat room and see if there's any specific questions about the production thing maybe I left out, or even about the pricing thing. If you guys have any quick questions before we close the podcast out, I'd love to see them. And if you want to join the chat room and you're listening to the podcast later, I usually do this on Wednesdays while we're waiting for questions here. I usually do this on Wednesdays at 2 o'clock Central Time, which is 3 o'clock Eastern Time. And none of the other time zones matter unless you're skiing or snowboarding, if you will. So let's see if we have anything. Somebody brought up animatics. Bella Peppa brought them up. You're nailing it today, buddy. Bella Peppa said, what about animatics? And he's asking me if I do animatics. I've done a few, but animatics are actually an entirely, it's almost its own business in a way. And there's a lot of agencies and production houses that work on only animatics because they've become really good at it. And animatics are cool because, I don't know how cool they are, but they're interesting because what they are fake versions of the commercial that are made as quickly as possible with as low a budget as possible so that that commercial can usually be shown to a user group or like a study group or what do they call those? A testing group. User study group. They're shown to those people and then they decide if the agency should make this commercial. So one I worked on was a Tropicana orange juice commercial, and they already had the music picked out. They already had the storyline picked out. It was all these actors that were going to open the fridge, take a drink of orange juice, and just straight up dance it. Just dance in the kitchen, dude. This was it. So they're going to open the fridge, drink the juice, and dance, dude. Their morning is ready because Tropicana made them dance. But they didn't, the agency didn't quite want to pay for the commercial to be made. But they also needed to get it into people's like hands and let people see it and then basically vote on if this commercial would work. So they had a team do a animatic, and I was part of that team early on when I was freelancing, and I had to take cutouts of an illustrator that took the illustrator basically took he drew people dancing, like two or three frames of people dancing, like one with his left hand in the air, one with his right hand in the air, and one with like his hands out to the side, like he just don't care. And then I had to take those three cutouts, and then I basically had to like animate them around like puppets, or I would use morphing tools to make them kind of move around, and then they show that to the agency, and then they decide based on what other people say if they should put their money into this commercial or not. As the story goes, 2 to 3 months later, I heard that song because I had to listen to this song over and over and over again to get people moving around. And so I forgot what I was doing, but I heard the song out of the back of my ear, you know, and I was like, why does that song sound so familiar? And why do I want to stab myself in the heart? And it was because that song that I listened to on loop for a whole day was playing on the TV, and I ran in, and there it was. There were dancing people on the TV, and they made it. They made the commercial. I hope I had a part in that. But that was, that's a little bit about, what do they call that? Animatics. Good question, Bella Peppa. Thanks, buddy. All right. I'm going to say goodbye for now, everybody. And thank you again for stopping by for another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Like I said, if you want to join the chat room, we do this on Wednesdays at 2 Central. And you can subscribe through iTunes, or you could come to the website and check it out. And of course, I always have tutorials and stuff coming out as well at grayscalegorilla.com. So thanks again, everybody, for checking out this episode, and I hope to see you in another one soon. Bye, everybody.